I did go on to inspection in between time. I applied for a job in inspection, and I went on to inspection under the supervision of Ron Yardley. And during the time on inspection, I worked in the machine shop and the new fitting shop. And whilst in the new fitting shop one Saturday morning, I got chatting to Nigel Coote. And he said, "What are you doing this afternoon?" I said, "Well, probably go uptown and have a few beers, as I usually do." And he said, "Do you fancy coming down King's Holme?" I said, "No, I'm not really interested in rugby." He said, "We'll have a few beers before the game and probably a couple of beers after the game." I was sold. So that was my first visit to King's Holme, and I've been going ever since. So Nigel Coote sold me on that one.
So you eventually left the company then, Paul. Why was that? Was it to gain more experience or what?
No, I was made redundant in 1980. I think it was one of the first batches to go. The union had been upstairs, and there was a bit of a story about that, because they'd been upstairs and they'd obviously come back with figures and numbers of people who were going to go. And Albert Wilmot, who was working on the horizontal bore right opposite the inspection table in the light machine shop, and myself and Cyril Aldridge were on the inspection table at the time. And Albert came down and we went over and said to Albert, "How did it go?" And he said, "Well, we know the numbers now who have got to go." And he said, "We know the numbers of each department." So Cyril and I looked at each other and said, "Well, how many's going in inspection then, Albert?" And he said, "Well, when I tell you, you'll know who it is." And I looked at Cyril, and Cyril looked at me, and we said, "It's two, isn't it?" And he said, "Yes." And it was myself and Cyril. So, yes, that was unfortunately 1980 when we were made redundant.
Oh, dear, a sad time, sad time. But you married at that time, Paul, or are you still a single lad?
No, I was married then. And, after that, I managed to succeed in getting a job with Davy. And I know that the experience of Fielding and Platt helped me to get the job, because Davies had a Fielding, rather, machined and built a rolling mill for Davy, for Hewlett's Aluminium in South Africa. And it's rather ironic that the site engineer who visited Fielding's was the guy who was interviewing me at Davy, a guy called Bill Ridsdale, in the quality control department at Davy. So he'd been to Fielding and Platt, he'd seen what we did, and I think that held me in great stead for getting the job with Davy. He went to South Africa to install the rolling mill as well as build it, visit Fielding and Platt and Ron Yardley at Fielding's. So, yes, it was quite interesting how it worked out.
So you travelled quite a lot with the company?
Yeah, I travelled all around the UK, all over the world with Davies. It was a very interesting job. It was, Japan, all over Europe, America, Korea, all sorts of places. And, I was at the foundation stone for that. Getting that job was obviously the Fielding and Platt apprenticeship. You know, we knew the heavy engineering we'd been involved with, or I'd been involved with, and knew it was a good sounding board for the job at Davy.
Was there anything of all your travels, you mentioned all the countries you've been, Paul, was there anything particularly of particular interest or anything particularly amusing that you can tell us?
Oh, there are probably quite a few stories. I can't recall a lot of them at the moment, but I know that certainly working in Japan, they're, it's a smashing place. They are really lovely people, and they love the English. If you're American, they're not too keen. And I do remember one particular instance. We were in a hotel, myself and a colleague from Sheffield, in Japan, and there was an American there. He was working for some Hughes Oil Company, I think it was. And we all ordered a steak one night, and we were always loved with this young waitress. We used to call her Minnie Mouse because she wore little Minnie Mouse shoes. And we all ordered a steak, and these three steaks rolled up, and mine and Roy's from Sheffield. Smashing, knife through butter, it was lovely. And this American, who was always rude, it was a, "Hey, get me a beer," that sort of talk, you know. And his steak was like shoe leather, and he couldn't see the logic in it. Whereas Roy and I had a right chuckle that, you know, you'd be nice to people, and it's no matter where you are in the world, you'd be nice to people and they'll be nice to you.
Yeah, exactly. So eventually, then you come back to the company, Paul. Were you a bit tired of travelling the world, or what was the reason?
No, Davies decided to close the. Meanwhile, I'd moved back to to Stonehouse in Gloucestershire, and I was still travelling around for them. But then they closed the offices in Poole and wanted people to relocate to Sheffield, which I wasn't particularly enamoured with. You know, I like Gloucestershire, and we, you know, even when we lived in Bournemouth, that's a nice part of the world. So I took the redundancy and came up to Gloucester, you know, stayed in Stonehouse rather. That was when we saw the advert for the works manager at Fielding and Platt, which I'm pretty sure was in the paper. And I applied in 1996 and returned there as works manager. And I think, again, in a funny twist of fate, the experience I'd obtained at Davies put me in good job, in good stead for the job back at Fielding and Platt, because of all the machines I'd been involved with in building. Of course, Fielding and Platt then was just an assembly shop. There was no machine shop or fabrication shop. So it suited me down to the ground to be building and testing machines, which is what I'd been doing for many years with Davies.
Who interviewed you then, Paul, on your return? Can you remember?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was Norman Davenport, and I'm not so sure that even Roger Beard wasn't involved. But I wouldn't be 100% on that. So if I'm wrong, I'll apologise to the two gentlemen. But yes, I remember going for the interview, and I'm pretty sure it was Norman, and even Ron Yardley might have been involved as well.
Obviously, you were successful then, Paul. Can you tell me a little bit about what your duties were as a works manager?
Yeah, the responsibilities and duties were to organise and assemble and testing of all the presses and machines that, pardon me, that were built in the new fitting shop, along, of course, with the help of Ron Yardley, who was still there and much like Norman, a cornerstone of the company as it was then. I think at that stage there were only about 10 fitters left in the fitting shop and probably about two in the stores. And as I said earlier, I reported directly to Roger Beard, who was the managing director at the time.
In this position, were there any particular incidents of which you were particularly proud, or any amusing incidents?
I think the proudest thing I could say is that I started at Fielding's as a young green apprentice, and then to return some years later as a works manager was quite a proud moment, albeit with a much smaller team of people, but still, you know, with a fitting shop capable of building and lifting large presses up to 100 tons, which we did. You know, one of the last ones that went out was a total of 120 tons, which was split, obviously, into two. And we built some interesting machines there during that time, ranging from the Elixir 16 meganewton extrusion press, radiator machines, which were through Henry Berry, propellant press, which went up to, I think it was RAF, or near Worcester somewhere, DDI machines, ring rollers for Doncasters in Blaenavon, slab presses, of course, they were always always good work, and H3 pumps and A2 pumps, both new and refurbished. So there was still a lot of work going through the shop at the time. The Elixir press, however, did cause me to nearly have a heart attack. It was loaded onto a low loader the day before because they wanted to ship it out early in the morning before the traffic you know, was too busy. So it was agreed that I'd get in early and let the driver drive the low loader out of the factory because it was all packed inside. It was a big factory, you know. And so with only me and the driver on site, he proceeded to pull out of the factory, no problem at all. And then as you go out the top door of the new fitting shop, you just got to make a little bare right to go down to the bottom gate. And as he turned right, the press started to lean over at an angle. And both he and I couldn't believe it was still on the trailer. We were convinced that we'd be phoning round for cranes to pick up this 60, 80 ton, whatever it was, off the car park. And we were running round frantically, throwing timbers underneath the left-hand side of the trailer to stop it going any further. The driver proceeded to telephone his boss. I won't mention any names of the company. And eventually, through the conversations and what he said, realised that there was a valve that hadn't been set correctly. So when that was done, we slowly saw this 60 to 80 ton lump start to right itself back up again. And when it was set level, he was safely on his way. But we really did think that this brand new, spanking new 16 meganewton extrusion press would be on its side in the car park. But thankfully it didn't.
So that was obviously a difficult moment. Any particular sad moments, Paul?
Yes, unfortunately, as works manager, you have to do the ultimate thing, and that's to tell people they don't have jobs any longer. It was the start of the wind down of the company, I suppose. And yeah, you've got to tell people they don't have a job. And I know what that's like. I've been on the receiving end myself in 1980. I must say, for the record, though, when I was made redundant in 1980, I was asked by Norman Davenport to go to the works manager's office. And I think his name was Andrew Chalmers at the time. So I knew most likely what was about to happen. And he handed me an envelope. I asked him if it was a birthday card because it was my birthday. I now know, having had to do it, how cruel that must have been and how bad he must have felt. And, you know, it's one of the things you look back on. You think, well, you know, that wasn't a very good thing to do. But at the time, of course, you're angry, you're disappointed, you're sad, you know, that you're leaving. But so it just came out. And I do feel bad about that when I look back, especially having had to do the same thing myself. The sad moments, obviously, leaving Fielding and Platt for the last time, and then to see it raised to the ground in such an unceremonious way. I think it's fair to say industry of the likes, I fear, will never be seen again in the city. Once it's gone, it's gone, and I don't see any sign of anything like that coming back again, you know, which is really sad.
What can you comment about the workforce and the management?
Well, I think the first thing to say is most of the managers and directors, as far as I can remember, were mostly through came through the workshops and the factories themselves, or through drawing office or planning departments. Unlike nowadays, they all just seem to fly out of university straight into top jobs, and they don't really they've never really actually worked on the shop floor or in departments associated with it. But the shop floor people themselves, I mentioned earlier all the names, that fantastic people. I mean, I know it's an old saying that it was a family atmosphere, but it really was. There was tiffs, there was barneys, there was arguments, but no, everybody got on well because everybody was good at their job. You know, there was no hanger-oners. Everybody was a skilled man, skilled woman. I say woman because, of course, we had Mary up in the crane. He was a damn good crane driver. And, you know, all the labourers and the crane drivers and everybody, they all got on well and they all did a good job. And, you know, there were obviously moments, as you expect, but predominantly it was a good place to work. Nice atmosphere. I don't think many people left of their own accord from there. Most people stayed on till they got pushed out or retired or whatever, I think.
One big family, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. And I think it's true to say that the reason why you're doing what you are today and why the reunions have been so successful and the website's probably had hundreds of thousands of hits is because it was such a good place to work.
So you finally left when the company was running down then?
Yes, I left the company just as it was being transferred to Henry Berry, which unfortunately you read between the lines, and no disrespect to Henry Berry, but when you send a company to another company, it's not the same. They haven't got the enthusiasm or the expertise to carry it on. And after that, I went to work for various machine companies in Stroud and ended up as general manager of the machine shop at De Havilland Fabrication Welding Limited in Stonehouse. And that's where I still am today, working hard for a living, just in case my boss is listening.